You're listening to Visionaries by Wonder, a podcast where CEOs, founders, and leaders share their success stories. With their host, Jeannie O, the founder of Wonder and an award-winning product strategy and UX design firm, we'll be exploring the world and connecting with inspiring individuals. Join us.
From runway model to CEO, Dorothy Grant's career is a fascinating journey that will leave you inspired. After spending several years as a full-time fashion model for major brands like Vogue, Cosmopolitan, and Zac Posen, and walking down the runways of New York, London, Milan, and Paris Fashion Week, Dorothy pursued her passion for tech and earned a degree in computer science and intelligence system from Columbia University. Her impressive career also includes working as a natural language processing engineer and quantitative researcher at NASA and earning a master's of engineering in computer science from Cornell University. Today, she is the CEO and co-founder of Caveat, a revolutionary platform that gives creators control over their contracts and career. So Dorothy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Wow. Thank you so much for having me, Jeannie. I wish I could have you do my intros every day.
Just call me up. I'll do your intros. So you have such a unique background, starting out as a fashion model. How did you wind up in tech? Like, how did you end up pursuing this career?
Yeah, super randomly, actually. I was living in London at the time, and I met through Facebook Marketplace. We both wanted this same apartment. And she was American and she was studying abroad and she studied computer science. And I was like, hey, like, let's get coffee. We're both American in this weird country where they all have accents. Yeah, we have and we were there and we got coffee together. And I was like, so what's computer science? And she's like, it's okay. It's a lot of math, but they need more women. So you should do it. And I was like, sold. Done. I was already accepted into school at this point, but the application didn't ask for a major because they kind of knew they'd probably change your mind. And so when I went to orientation at, for my undergrad, I had decided to do computer science out of the blue, even though I didn't really know what it was. And I loved people's reactions. I know that's like maybe not the best answer as to why I studied CS. But after one semester, I was just pretty good at it and I liked it a lot. So continued in that path.
Oh, wow. So it doesn't take you much to convince you to change your thoughts.
No, I did like a Khan Academy course and I like made a little plane fly across the screen. I was like, this is so cool. And I was sold.
That's awesome. So you were studying computer science and then, so what was the emergence between, learning computer science to, saying, okay, I'm going to start this company and NLP?
Yeah, that's a great question, because honestly, I think I'm still asking myself that. NLP came pretty naturally. I grew up bilingual, so I think the intersection of linguistics and computer science was just like a really cool field. So I studied NLP, and the school I was at had some pretty top professors in that space, so I felt really lucky to be able to even get to learn this. And one of my friends was like, I'll take it with you. And so we took it together. I really loved it. And so I knew that I wanted to focus mostly on NLP because it was so application-based. There's no really application of NLP in which you don't directly interact with something that humans are doing, really solving a human-focused problem because language is pretty innately human. And so I really liked that. Like, no matter what industry I went to work in, I thought that that was a cool application. As for the actual startup, I thought I was going to down the line in my life path. I never thought it would be like right after grad school by any means, but the program I was in was very entrepreneurial focused. I met two amazing women who are now my co-founders, and together we were like, it's now or never. We're all in one place. We have the skills. We're here. We're doing it. And our school kind of helped us set things up and get started.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. I have a very similar story. I was working on my first startup during grad program as well. So for those who don't know what NLP is, could you explain what that technology is and how do you use it?
Yeah, absolutely. So NLP, I guess this is going to use more buzzwords, so it might not be very helpful. Let me know. But is basically all things artificial intelligence, but focused purely on text data. So it's predictive statistics, in essence. But the input data is always going to be text. So whether that's newspapers or medical articles or contracts, you basically take in information that's written language, and whatever processing you're doing, whether it's predicting the next word or summarizing a book, whatever it is, it's focused in that kind of domain. So, for example, when you're typing on Google Docs and it recommends the end of the sentence for you or Gmail, it like autofills my entire emails now, that's NLP.
Okay. And is that similar to ChatGPT, what they're doing with that AI?
Absolutely. ChatGPT is like the new it thing. And I feel really cool because I like know a little bit about NLP. But yeah, absolutely. It's basically, I mean, it's trained on a database that is so intense of the entire internet. So there's definitely a lot of information that it's trained on, but it's exactly that. It takes that written data and makes summarizations or conclusions based on that. So it's basically just the sexiest version of NLP that has yet to come to consumer facing.
Gotcha. So yeah. So in summary, it's taking texts that are readily available, summarizing or predicting what's to come after the inputs.
Absolutely. There's a lot of different tasks you can have, just like there's any number of tasks you can do with numbers. It's just basically applying those same functions to written language.
Yeah. And it's kind of amazing to think about all the different use cases, like even with ChatGPT. I mean, it's new, but it's become really popular. And I'm hearing from different friends like, hey, I'm using ChatGPT for this and for that. And it's really amazing. Like, for instance, I had one friend who was saying that she uses it to do meal prepping. And I was like, what? Like, I've never even thought of that. She's like, yeah, I just type in like, I need a recipe for a family of four, and these are our dietary restrictions. And then ChatGPT spits out a full week's worth of recipes. I'm like, wow, that's amazing. But you're using NPL in a different use case. So can you tell us a little bit more about Caveat and how you're using NPL?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, now I need to like check it out for meal prepping. So thank you for that tip. And as for Caveat, we're using NLP to basically translate each clause into really simple explanations of that clause. So if there's a contract, or I mean, really most contracts are filled with super verbose, complex legal jargon. Nobody understands. Witnesseth, here and after, whatever it is, there's like an entire contract's like one sentence of nonsense.
Yeah.
and yet they're like, your rights. And it's super important document. And so basically Caveat takes those clauses and simplifies them. So it'll get, for example, a usage rights clause, which will be written in this really complex manner, and we'll just simplify it to say, hey, this is usage rights. This is how usage rights is important to creators. These are the typical things to look out for, etc.
So it's almost like having your own contract lawyer. Like, I don't know, at least that's how I'm thinking about it, because I would want to hire a lawyer to say, hey, I have no idea what I'm signing. Can you like translate it into normal human language? and it's almost like Caveat is saying like, okay, here's a contract and here's a simple form of what you're actually signing.
Exactly. So we're at no point providing legal advice, nor do we replace lawyers. In fact, one of our next features that we want to kind of test is connecting people to specialized lawyers should they still want it. Also to emphasize that we're not providing legal advice, because that's like an important distinction we have to make. But absolutely, it's kind of similar to like a TurboTax or WebMD. TurboTax isn't an accountant. They don't have a CPA or whatever those qualifications are. WebMD definitely is not a doctor, but they kind of enable like a first step of like, okay, this is a little bit more simple. It makes it a little bit more accessible and really just democratizes that information for a wider audience.
Yeah. And it's almost like you're empowering the creators, because you're giving them actual knowledge that they otherwise wouldn't have. They're just signing away. Cool. We're working with brands. I'm getting paid. Let me just sign my life away. But you don't actually know what you're signing. So you're giving them that knowledge and that power back to them.
Absolutely. That is 100% our goal, our mission, our value. Everything we want is to basically provide users, creators with that information, and then they can do with that what they will. Like, a definition of success for us is that they would go in and negotiate something that they didn't know. But also, if they're A-okay with everything in the contract, that's great too.
Yeah. So why is that important to you? Like, why the creator space as opposed to other areas that have contracts?
Yeah, I mean, definitely from personal experience, to be honest, is where this kind of stemmed from. So I started off at 17. I signed my first contract. And I saw in that contract, I had a family friend who read it over for me. And they helped me kind of do exactly what Caveat does, which is simplify, you know, give some, you know, some insights here and there. And so I went in at 17, not knowing that this was like a big deal. My parents were like, of course you negotiate a contract. This is a business. And I was like, cool, I'll go negotiate this. And I negotiated with one of the biggest agencies in the world. And they were so accommodating. They were like, of course, yes on this, no on this, you know, like a normal compromise. And in doing so, I saw a huge difference between the position it put me in and other people with the same potential agency or even with different agencies of, not only does it build a better relationship, but it also prevents certain things that just protect you in the long run. So for example, I added a caveat, that's a little bit where they came from, that they, you know, I wanted to be asked permission before being charged for anything. Sounds pretty straightforward if it's my money, but it's not the norm. So that was so, so helpful because I was able to stay on top of every single bit of my accounting. I never became indebted to my agency, which is honestly the norm. And yet when I then went to a different agency and I didn't have this family one-time favor friend read over my contract, I sent it to my mom. His first language isn't even English. She's brilliant. But like, we both missed stuff in this contract. Neither of us are lawyers. And I saw a lot of problems with like this other contract where I didn't have that, you know, input. And I missed a lot of different things, which led to like being kind of financially exploited and put me in situations I just didn't feel comfortable in.
Wow. So walk us through that. Like, you know, what's typically in these contracts? And you were saying you missed a lot of things, like, and being indebted to the agency. For people who don't know anything about, you know, agency world, like, walk us through what that actually means, because it sounds pretty predatorial.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that any industry that the primary labor force is like 15 to 19 year old young women is going to have a sort of predatory aspect to it. And the creator economy is no different. So some aspects, and of course, like, you know, I speak of this, like my first agency I had was great. And then I saw the difference with others. So it's not at all like every single agent is like this, especially not the individual, but common situations that occur around financials, for example, are that you get charged for a lot of things without knowing it. So you'll be sent to a shoot and you didn't know that you were paying for it. Or
what are they charging you for? Because I thought you were making them money.
Yeah, but they basically, so there's a lot of things in there where you're an independent contractor, at least in the United States. If you have an agency or you're a freelancer, you're an independent contractor, which means that you aren't employed, and yet you have usually exclusivity with an agency. So you're not employed by them. Mm-hmm. You're not employing them, and yet you can only work with them, but they can work with anyone. And so there's kind of balances of you make them money. They take percent out of the commission, which makes sense. Yes. If they're getting you a job, that's kind of the return, like, favor. But then they'll also charge you for, like, once I went to get lunch with an agency and I got a bill like 3 years later.
Oh my gosh.
I know. They sent me to a haircut or to like personal training, and it just shows up on your calendar. Like, it wasn't really much of like a, you should do this. Or it was just like, this is what you're doing today. Yeah. And I had no idea. I got like $180 haircut, and I was like, wait, no, I didn't want that. That was expensive.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of situations, like a lot of models also live in model apartments and stuff. So there's a lot of places in which, but that's more specific to the modeling world. But even with creators, you know, having something like a reshoot fee where if the client decides that all of a sudden they want a very different campaign or a very different look, you should get paid for that new campaign, like if you did all the work for the original one. And so that's something that, you know, we advocate for and we'll find in your contract is missing or not. So a lot of things like that where it's just it's an industry that's gone really unregulated. And there's amazing organizations that are working to regulate it, such as the Model Alliance. They're doing amazing work. And we're also focused on kind of more of a ground-up approach of how helping the actual individual inform themselves and protect themselves and what is a business.
Yeah, that's so crazy. I mean, to be indebted to an agency that's supposed to be making you money, and sound, it just sounds like a, you know, it's a one-sided exclusivity, borderline abusive relationship.
I kind of agree. I mean, even for example, I've heard of some agents that will give you your salary and allowance, or, you know, there's a thing called your mother agency. So the vocabulary around it is even very interesting of like making it seem more, childish and less like a business.
Cause they're talking to the, as you said, 15 to 19 year old women mostly. That's crazy. That's so crazy. I'm curious, like, what experience you've learned from being a model, if there's any, that has helped you be a better entrepreneur and CEO now?
So many. I think it was really like, I know that I've talked about some of the negative sides of it, and there were plenty of them. But I also think that it's really amazing to grow up that quickly. Be so independent at, you know, 17, 18, however old you are when you start. And so at that age, I was already paying a rent, doing all of those things that just like adults seem to do. And yet it was like, I was just doing it, living in countries where I didn't speak the language or I didn't know anybody. And so it's really like a forced wake up call, but in a great way. And then on top of it, you're working with people who are at the top of their game. Like I met designers who have been doing this for years, who are respected, who are awarded, who have all these things. And you can just learn so much through watching, through speaking, through just being a part of that world. And I think the people you meet in the modeling industry have been some of the most important people like in my life, and have been just really, it's interesting because, you know, before modeling and after modeling, I was in very academic situations and focused mindsets where meritocracy was all that matter type of thing. And yet all of a sudden it was like the definition of success in the creative industries wasn't about your grades or wasn't about how hard you worked even. It was about like your creative process and this whole outside view that I just had never been exposed to, which was really great.
Like I love that, like you're taking what you've done in your you know, previous career and just merging that in with tech. And it's, yeah, you're like true definition of brain and beauty. That's so awesome.
Thank you. No, I appreciate that. Definitely just trying to, I mean, even one of the reasons we're not expanding to other verticals is because like, I don't know what it's like to like negotiate a real estate agreement or, I mean, real estate is one thing, but like I've never bought a house. I've never divorced someone or married someone. Like there's so many contracts that are personal that I've never had. And yet like, so I'm not the right person. Like I really don't appreciate unsolicited advice, as I kind of mentioned. So I really don't want to be that person that's turning around and doing that back.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about maybe even like licensing it though? Like if there's another entrepreneur that might be in the space, that's like, oh, I know, you know, everything about, you know, divorce contracts, but I don't have the technology, but you have the technology.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a world in which we could definitely like almost like white label sort of like whatever. I think that would definitely be a possibility. It's not like, I think that's more like when the situation comes, there's less active steps you can take towards getting to that goal.
Yeah.
Whereas like right now we know that we can help with other aspects. So that's kind of where we're putting our attention just for now.
So what would you say is like a key takeaway for someone who's never been in this industry before, what you've learned, that's helping you now as an entrepreneur?
You're making me synthesize my response. It's great. Let me think about this. I think advocating for yourself would be a really big one. Nobody cares as much about how successful you are than you are. And in that industry, you really have to be that person and go that extra mile. And I think that has fed in really, really well to the entrepreneurial journey.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I have a friend who constantly reminds, you know, our circle friends, like, know your worth and double it. And it's so true in entrepreneurship, especially like, for instance, in my industry where we're selling service, there are thousands of other agencies that do what we do at very different price points, right? We have agencies that are half our price, that are double or triple our price. And for us, when we're advocating, we have to speak like we are the best, because, I mean, in my opinion, we are the best, but but we have to advocate for ourselves and like know our worth, because there are going to be leads and clients who are like, oh, can you do this for, you know, fraction of the price, and like totally undervaluing the work that we're doing. And we have to put our foot down and say, no, we know the value that we're delivering. We will not do that work for any less than however much we think it's worth. So I 100% agree with you about like advocating. I think that's super, super important. Moving on to challenges, right? Like, what challenges are you having now starting Caveat, and how did you overcome them?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest challenge is really just starting a company in the middle of an economic recession would have some downfalls. It was funny because when we first, you know, really considered seriously starting our company and doing this full time, which was the important distinction, we knew we wanted to continue, but we were like, are we going to do this part time and maybe get jobs and figure it out? Or are we going to just like dive in the deep end? And when we were deciding to just take this dive, it was like March, April of 2022. Which was a very different situation than even June of 2022.
Yeah.
And so the advice we were getting from people who really knew what they were talking about, obviously just couldn't predict the future, was like, you'll be fine, raise right now, and then you'll be set and all this stuff. So I think that's been a really challenging part, where those first few months where we were like questioning everything we were doing, like, it's really difficult to raise all of a sudden, yet we're hearing that it should be easy. Mm. And that was like a really difficult challenge. And so now it's been a big step towards, okay, what are the new requirements in this current situation that are required to raise, and how do we get to those steps?
Mm, gotcha. Has it been getting easier for you? It's, you know, it's now February 2023. Or are you still kind of waddling in that challenge of raising capital in this economic situation?
I think that the situation itself hasn't changed. My perspective on it probably has, which has made it easier in terms of, first of all, even understanding where we are and that it's difficult for everyone, that it's not like, it's not just us, and it's not, we're not the only ones facing this problem, but a lot of other founders are facing it, which I guess misery loves company, what can I say? I think also just like our product has developed and therefore our narrative has as well. And I think that's just made the whole situation a lot more straightforward.
Mm. And so what's been the response from both investors and your users as well?
Yeah, I mean, so users have had really great responses. We're excited. We partnered with Neon Coat, which is an application that basically enables services in exchange for posts on Instagram within our target audience. So it's been a really great fit. And so through that platform, we get a lot of posts on Instagram and outreach and just mentions about the product, which has been a really amazing process to see it firsthand from users. Someone uploaded the other day, like three videos on their story. I don't know. I think they're like a minute each about like uploading the contract and that process and how helpful it was. And it's just like amazing as a founder to be like, wow, like I had a part in helping this random person whom I don't know. So that's been probably the most amazing response and part of building.
Yeah. That must be a very rewarding feeling too. Just like having someone totally random, you know, talking about your product. It's like, oh my God, that's mine.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was funny because like they pronounced it incorrectly. And I'm like, I am so happy that can be how we pronounce it from now on. Like,
how do you pronounce it?
They said Caveat, which I guess I understand. We could get to that.
Okay.
Caveat, like even with a C, is a weirdly spelled word. So I understand.
Yeah, it's almost like it's like a cool way of saying it, right? It's like when they say Target and Target, like Caveat and Caveat. I don't know.
I'm okay with that. Yeah. Or like, I don't know, like this was like a debate for my whole undergrad and grad, but like LaTeX and LaTeX or LaTeX. I don't know if you ever used this.
Yeah.
It's
I like mean, such it doesn't a come up in conversation, but yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah. Fair. That was a pretty unique experience, yeah. Maybe. It was a big one.
Yeah, niche or niche. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. That works in the context.
It seems like you're getting really good feedback from users. What about investors going back to the economic climate?
Yeah, I think investors shifted from being able to raise on a deck. You know, the stories of like the, I don't want to generalize, but you know, the tech bros raising a three pitch deck, raising 12 million valuation, like crazy things. That's a little bit gone by the wayside. And now they want proof of concept, which makes sense. Like I'm not like arguing that point. I think I would be similar if I was an investor. I think it's just like the demands for what they want to see are higher and like really proof of like the market. I guess the creator economy was pretty hot a couple of years ago and now it's like almost less trendy. So it's like, I'm like rebuilding a trend.
Gotcha. And so, if someone is to start a company, in this economic climate, and they want to go into creator industry. Is it an industry? I don't know how to, I guess, creator space. Product. Yeah. Like, what advice would you have for someone who's like, I want to build a product for this space?
I feel like I'm still at the phase where I would be asking them for advice, but if I would have to give advice, it's really just to understand that while it's like a really huge economy, like $104 billion industry, a lot of people still just don't necessarily get it, which is totally understandable. Just like if someone pitched like, I don't know, a healthcare company to me, like I don't have any healthcare knowledge. Like it makes sense that I wouldn't be the right person to talk to with that. And so I think that's a really important shift, is there's going to be a lot of people who don't really know much about the creator economy or only see it as like this kind of trivial people dancing in front of videos thing.
Yeah.
Which it's not, but that's okay. And you don't have to convince everyone of, like, if someone doesn't buy into the problem, they're not going to buy into the solution.
I see that. I firsthandedly have been seeing that with my boyfriend is in a startup that's also in the creator space too, actually. And you know, he's had some challenges talking to investors because traditional VC investors are used to seeing like e-commerce and you know, B2B stuff. I don't know. It's just not, the creator space is not what they're used to. And so when they see it, they're like, okay, this is cool, but they don't understand it. So I definitely see that challenge happening. I'm curious if you've been to investors and they're like, okay, this is cool, but if there's not really a use case for it.
Definitely had my fair share of calls, and you know, I've gotten used to the point of like, now it's like, it's fine to end those calls early and to not, you know, you don't have to, it's not personal. You're not, it's not that deep, you know?
Yeah.
and so, yeah, definitely had calls where the investors either like, no, like influencers or models have a glamorous life type of feeling. Like they live a life of luxury. They have teams of lawyers working for them.
Yeah.
This is a stupid product. And I'm like, you know what? Like, if that's what you believe, like I'm not in the next 20 minutes going to completely revolutionize your way of thinking on this industry and convince you to invest in a solution for a problem that you just discovered.
Yeah.
Still probably hesitant about. But honestly, I've even kind of exposed, I guess, my own biases. I've had experiences where I thought that was going to be the situation. I went into a room and it was like all older adults that I was like, there's no way they're going to relate to this, but I'll do my thing anyway. I pitched, and at the end, this man who was probably like 60, 70, I don't know, older, like all white hair, came up to me and he was like, my son is in the creator economy. He sends me his contracts. This is an amazing product. I was so quick to like make assumptions. So you know, it really goes like, you can't assume.
Exactly. That's amazing. I mean, at least for him, I bet that if he didn't have a son in the space, I don't know how quick he would be to have dismissed it. Right. It's because he understands it that he's like, okay, I'm going to vouch for this product. When you're on that phone call and then you're like 10 minutes in, this person is not going to get it. How do you hang up? Cause that's kind of awkward too. You're just, you've set the meeting for an hour potentially. And this person's just like, you know, influencers have this glamour life. I don't think this is a viable product. How do you hang up the phone?
Yeah. I mean, it's still, you're in like a position where like, for better or worse, you can't just hang up, right? You have to still, like a professional setting, you have to make sure that you're polite. Investors talk, and there's this weird thing of like fear of being blacklisted, which is very similar to the modeling industry, but I can get into that after. Where you kind of feel like you have this like odd relationship where they have power, but it's not really the case. Like you have the power, like you make them money. Anyway. So I think it's really just through honest communication of being like, look, like that totally makes sense. I understand. Like, I respect your time. It doesn't seem like it'll be a great fit at this moment, but like we can add you to our investor newsletter, you know, and we can touch back base in like another year.
Yeah. I think that sounds really simple. But I know a lot of people might have challenges in actually, you know, saying that because it's a boundary that like, hey, like it's not a good fit. We're going to hang up. I mean, you don't think we're going to hang up, but that's exactly what you're getting to.
No, and the first time an investor did it to me, I was like, oh, like so offended. But then afterwards I was like, wait, I have like 30 minutes back to my life. Like this is actually great. And it was from that, like I don't know, hopefully other people don't feel like taken aback by it or something, but I was actually really grateful that he was just like, look, like you're way too early for what we invest in. They invested like $10 million checks. So like, you know, it's a little bit far out for us. And he was like, yeah, like you're just a little too early. So like, you know, we can just like continue this later. And at first I was like, oh, how rude. And then I was like, actually how nice. Like that's so generous.
Yeah. He just gave you back your time, which is the most valuable thing ever.
I mean, there are a lot of things. It's all about like managing your time and expectations.
Exactly. Thank you. You have just simplified it exactly how I want to say it. Okay. So let's go back to the product itself. Are there other products out there that are similar to Caveat? And how does it differentiate itself from other platforms for creators?
Yeah, so I'll start off by saying that our specific solution within our vertical is unique. We don't have any direct competitors in that sense, but we have competitors in terms of similar mission. So for example, there's an amazing company called FU Pay Me. I'll let the listeners know what I stand for. amazing company, and they basically created this glass door for influencers to increase transparency and understanding about, you know, payments and actual payment amounts. So they have an amazing vision, and there's in no world in which I would, you know, say a negative word about their company. But the way that we're differentiating ourselves is we're really focusing on how an individual, so within your contract, fit within that greater trend or that greater industry. And so we'll focus on the payments as well as finding clauses that might just be predatory, as well as, you know, figuring out like making sure you understand your tax status as an independent contractor. So stuff like that. So we really kind of fill out a lot of the broader backend process of what it means to be an independent contractor and a gig worker, content creator, whatever vocabulary you want to throw at it. And then there's other legal tech solutions like Rocket Lawyer, LegalZoom, even DocuSign. But they're very much like inch deep and mile wide in terms of industry. So they help so many people, but they don't necessarily really solve all the problems of one customer type.
Gotcha. So whereas you guys are going pretty deep and then deep in terms of industry, short in terms of, I guess, offering.
Yeah, exactly. So we're inch wide, mile deep, or we're, you know, our long-term vision is definitely to become the one-stop shop for all things creator needs. So whether that is helping with a tax and immigration or helping track your payments or even integrating finances, whatever it might be in the next 5 years, like I have so many ideas, which, you know, I can't say which will be the ones that'll really happen at this point. But it's really that in 5 years, if someone wants to be a content creator, whether that's an athlete who, like a college athlete who's getting a brand deal, or a musician who's getting sponsored by, I don't know, there's nothing around me that's, sponsored by whatever brand, the first step that they have to do is create a Caveat account.
So your vision for Caveat is to continue to be in the space for content creators, as opposed to, you know, taking the technology and expanding it to other industries that might also have contract issues?
Yeah, that's more the plan that we're going towards. Obviously, when we first started off, we were open to both. And you know, there's nothing that says, like, I have no idea what the next 10 years will look like by any means. But we just have a deeper understanding of this customer. And we know that there's so many other problems that's left unsolved that we almost feel like we owe it to this customer to make sure that they're an underserved group in terms of they're really their own businesses. And if you think of a business and all the B2B SaaS softwares and platforms and enterprise level, et cetera, that there are out there for companies, there just aren't for these creators, which are solo entrepreneurs, but a lot of time they even have employees. And so really creating software that's specific to their needs.
And it's also a growing space too, right? Like I feel like everyone's becoming a content creator now. Like everyone who, especially those who are like, oh, I don't like social media and blah, blah, blah. And then next thing I see, it's like, they're posting their own, you know, version of dance videos. I'm like, what? Didn't you just say you hate social media 5 years ago?
No, it's a big difference. There, you know, I don't want to sound too pitchy, but I just know all these numbers off the top of my head. But there's 119% growth in the creator economy in the last 2 years, and then a 52% yearly average growth in influencer marketing since 2016. So it's just just blown up, and it's projected to blow up.
That is so crazy. And I think it's so essential too, in doing business, to have a personality and to have a personal brand out there and create content. And it's, to me, what the crazier part is, where people were so secretive that they had social media in the past because they're like, oh, my employer is going to see this. I don't want them to know what I'm posting. To now it's like, no, I need them to see what I'm posting so that I can get hired for my personality and influence. So I just think that whole trend has been really, really crazy.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see. A lot of startup founders are now becoming like creators in terms of like selling their brand. So yeah, it's impacting a lot of different spaces. And I think it's a continuing trend that is even amplified by like pushes towards more privacy and transparency with our data. So even with the recent is like a couple years ago at this point now, but the iOS updates become more and more privacy focused, which is making targeted advertisements, you know, you're the traditional, like, I think something in Facebook has an ad about it. It's making that more and more difficult because you can't collect the same amount of data about a user anymore. Mm-hmm. And so it's basically leading to a lot of brands focusing more on influencer marketing because that's basically self-selected targeted advertisements where people are choosing to see that ad, which is really strange if you think about it, I guess. But it's super powerful because people trust and that social proof is already there.
Yeah. And just kind of finishing up this topic of content creating, like, what advice would you have for brands or companies that are just now creating content and wanting to build their personal brand?
Yeah. So in terms of actually building a brand, a lot of it's about consistency and being really true to who you are. I think that can almost be seen through like the de-influencing trend that I was reading about like the other day of like
de-influencing.
Oh yeah.
What is that?
It's like a new thing where people, instead of going on and showing like, you know, this product or whatever that they're using, they say like, I used this and I didn't like this product.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So I think that's kind of starting the trend of like, or like continuing kind of, or rather demonstrating that it's really important to stick to what's true. Like if you are an athlete and you start advertising supplement.
Yeah.
Yeah. You start advertising something that's just like so off brand, like a guitar. I don't know.
Oh.
It just doesn't really make much sense. Yeah. Right. Like why would an athlete be doing that if that's not their brand? Or, I mean, it could be that they're also a musician. You know? Yeah. Maybe not the best example, but I think it's really just about staying true to who you are. So for example, if you can see based on my knowledge, I should never be promoting anything about athletes because it's not my forte, but like, that doesn't mean that I can't talk about other things.
Okay. De-influencing. That's so interesting. I haven't heard that one before. And definitely needs it too. I just feel like every time I open up social media, someone's always selling something. And I'm like, did you actually use that product? I don't know. Or did they just pay you to say that?
Yeah, you have to say that it's paid advertisement. So I guess you at least have that answer. But
yeah, still. So we covered a lot of topics. Is there anything else that you feel really passionate about sharing with the audience that we haven't covered?
I mean, I think this is more just generic advice, but I was thinking about like what things I'm proud of in my career or stuff like that. I think a lot of it's boiled down to just taking a lot of chances, even though like most of the things I've done haven't worked, like even in terms of like class projects or whatever things or situations they've been in. But I think it's so much about like really just putting yourself out there and just seeing like and asking questions, I think is such an important part of like learning and growing. And I think sometimes curiosity is perceived as stupidity. And I think that that's the stupidest thing you can imagine. Like being willing to ask questions and show that you're willing to learn on something or that you don't know something, which is normal. Nobody knows anything about every topic. Like that's impossible. And I think just really being curious will be super helpful in terms of whether it's a startup or a regular job or school or modeling, whatever it is, I think that goes a long way.
Yeah, hell yeah. Like I commend people who are willing to let go of their ego and put on that beginner's mindset to be curious, to ask questions, and to not be the smartest person in the room. Because I think it's easy to let our egos, be front and center and pretend like we know everything. But the best way to succeed and the best way to learn is to, as you said, be curious and ask as many questions as possible and have mentors around. And yeah, I think that is the fastest and the best way to learn something.
Yeah, I agree. Even our social media intern, who's like a couple of years younger than me, I'm like, tell me more. TikTok. I don't know anything about it. Like, and it's like people younger, older are going to have so many different experiences. So I think there's a lot to be said about that.
Yeah. For me personally too, it's just like, I've had some amazing mentors just because I'm like always trying to learn as much as possible. And I'm like, I don't know anything. I really don't know anything. I pass on knowledge from other people and apply it to my company. Yeah.
I mean, who actually knows stuff? That's my question.
No one. And that's the crazy thing. And just going back to content creating and social media, it always seems like it's not necessarily the smartest people that have the most influence, but it's actually those who not shout the loudest, but those who are always posting kind of get the attention. Like,
yeah, and I think those can tell a story. Yeah. I think that's like, and this is actually, you know what? These aren't my words. I was talking to someone else. As for, I feel like that caveat, you know, pun intended, could come with like most of the things I've said here. But I was talking to this amazing woman who has done a lot of work in the creator economy. And she was like, honestly, like started the creator economy, or maybe not that extent, but she's really cool. And she was basically saying, like, what makes a good content creator? Someone who can tell a story, who knows exactly, like, how to fit in cool a content or a product or a service or something into something that's actually happening in their lives. It's not just about, like, quantity and having, like, a post every day or whatever it is. It's really just about, like, making it seem like you're a real person.
Yeah.
And you do real person things, and those real person things include a duffel bag or coffee or whatever it is.
Right. It's about how do you take something that might feel intimidating and then also translating that for people to understand and sharing that story and insight and how that might apply to the other person. One example I'm thinking about is like anything health related, right? And you see more information from like health influencers that don't necessarily have medical degrees or health backgrounds, but they're able to translate what's happening in the health world that's easy for people to consume and understand based on the experiences that they had and telling that as a story format.
Yeah, I think that's a really big part. It's about personal experience, obviously not giving advice that's like unsolicited because nobody really appreciates that, but just about what it is that you experience and how that can help other people move forward if it does pertain to them. And yeah, I mean, honestly, it's pretty similar to what we're doing at Caveat, which is basically taking something that's really opaque and trying to make it more transparent and accessible.
Mm. And my final question to you is, where do you see the future of NLP and also Caveat?
Yeah, so future of NLP, I think, you know, ChatGPT is an amazing thing to kind of show that I think it's going to be a big part of our future. You know, like Bing buying over, like the, like integrating all this stuff. There's a lot of places in which I think some of our day-to-day activities could be streamlined through NLP, whether that's, you know, scheduling things or even blog writing or outline writing, whatever it is. There's a lot of things that ChatGPT or other NLP tools can and will continue to help with. I think, of course, the thing that NLP or whatever, any other AI won't replace is creativity, because at the end of the day, like, someone has to create that NLP model. Someone has to write it and someone has to train it. And that information is always in those tweaks and prompt engineering and all of that is always going to take some sort of human input. I say always, like, who knows, but I think that that's a really real aspect that won't get replaced. Though I saw an interesting statistic, this is a little bit off base, but it was something like over 40% of men used ChatGPT or some sort of AI tool to help them write their Valentine's Day cards.
Wow. Oh my God. Red flag.
Like red, but kind of green at the same time. I don't know how I feel about it.
I mean, that's an effort, right? Not to go off topic, but at first I'm like, yeah, that's a bit of a red flag. If you don't know what to write in your card, then like, I don't know, you probably shouldn't be dating that person. But at the same time, it's like, you could also argue that they were putting in effort.
I don't know. I guess it depends what they landed on. If they landed on like a roses are red type situation, then it's like real red flag. But if you know.
You know what? I'm so curious now. I'm on ChatGPT. Let me, I want to type it in and see what they say.
Okay. Let's do a live demo. See
let's try.
I had this really funny situation where it was the opposite. My boyfriend's like, Dorothy, you use ChatGPT too much. Like, you depend on it too much. You need to take a step back. And so, you know, he was like, it can't be like art. And so I asked ChatGPT to write me a poem about someone who used tech and excelled in creativity. And the poem like stabbed me in the back. It started off with like this, like, you know, this person used tech and they excelled and all this stuff. And then it ended up being, but they remained mediocre for their entire life. They could not come up with their own thing. And I was like,
Oh my God. Wow. No, I have, ChatGPT has been rebellious to me as well. I was trying to write a piece of content where I was trying to argue a point that, that being poor is a mindset. I was going to elaborate on how, you know, despite like economic situations and systematic situations, you can get yourself out of that situation. Anyways, long story short, I was hoping that they would give me certain bullet points or some ideas of how I can argue this point. And literally, I changed the prompt 7 times and it still kept saying that, that this is a systemic issue and that it basically was refusing to give me, you know, points as to why. It would not argue for my point.
Wow. That's really interesting. Yeah,
very liberal.
Okay, cool. Well, what's interesting is that it's trained on everything on the internet. So like it should have seen points against or for, you know, like there's 1,000 articles that must support what you're thinking,
but none of it. Yeah. It just kept saying like, it just wasn't having its day. Okay. So I'm going to type in, write me a Valentine's Day letter for my boyfriend of 4 years. Let's see what it says. Okay. Dear, add in boyfriend's name. As Valentine's Day approaches, my heart fills with love and gratitude for having you in my life. This is good. It's hard to believe that we've been together for 4 wonderful years, and yet it feels just like yesterday when we first met. From the moment I saw you, I knew that you were someone special. You have been my rock through thick and thin, always there to support me and cheer me up when I'm down. Your love and affection has sustained me through the toughest time, and your unwavering devotion has made every moment with you a true blessing. I want you to know that you're the most important person in my life, and I cherish every moment that we spend together, whether we're exploring new places, trying out new restaurants, or simply enjoying each other's company at home. Every moment with you is a joy. This Valentine's Day, I want to thank you for being the best boyfriend I could ever ask for. You have brought so much happiness and love into my life, and I cannot imagine a future without you. You are my soulmate, my partner, and my best friend, and I love you more than words could ever express. Happy Valentine's Day, my love. Here's to many more years and love and happiness together. With all my love, add your name. That is good. That's very good.
Oh, no. People are going to write their wedding vows.
Oh, don't give them ideas. What did you just do?
You know it's already happened. You know it.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
I mean, the crazy part is that it takes all these assumptions of, like, you know, you never told it that you went to restaurants, but obviously that's a pretty safe assumption to make that you've been to a restaurant with your significant other. And so it's super interesting to see how it has the word boyfriend, girlfriend, and it takes all those connotations of, okay, what is a traditional thing that would imply if you've been with this person for 4 years, what are traditional things that you would do together?
And that's how the natural language like process works, right? It's just taking text from where it exists and then trying to simplify. It's fascinating. My God.
Basically, like a whole network where boyfriend and girlfriend is really related to traveling together in love and experiences, and shared experiences is related to food and restaurants. There's like this whole network where everything is just like, okay, that's a safe assumption to make.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's going to be a future industry where, you know, people go onto these chat rooms to fall in love with an AI and that's their, you know, extent of a relationship. I'm sure it's already happening. I don't think I'm making this up.
Well, you're probably right. I see the Netflix title now, you know, like,
yeah. That's so crazy. Anyways, Dorothy, thank you so much for this fun, amazing interview. If people want to find you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pretty reachable. I mean, LinkedIn, generic, Dorothy Grant, my name. Otherwise, you know, you can email me at dorothy@caveatapp.com. Caveatapp.com is our website. Caveat App is our Instagram. Caveat App is our Twitter. Twitter and TikTok. So we have all of the above. So definitely reach out, follow us on socials, and really excited to continuing any and all conversations.
Amazing. And is there anything that the audience can do to reach out to help you in your journey?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, if you are a content creator in any regard and you've had contracts or you're having a contract or you know that you're going to get a contract with an agency or a brand and you want to better understand it, first and foremost, go to our website. It's beta.caveatapp.com. Upload, create an account, upload your contract, and, you know, get those simplified explanations and take those steps to really preparing yourself for taking control over your contract and your career and your livelihood. And then also, I mean, this goes to friends of creators. If you know anyone else who would benefit from this, and even agencies, brands, like anyone within this economy, creator economy, that being anyone within this creator economy who could kind of benefit from this space, like feel free to spread the word because you're really helping out a lot of people by doing so.
Amazing. So guys, definitely go help out Dorothy. And thank you so much for this interview. And fam, we'll see you next week.
Thank you so much for listening to Visionaries by Wander, where we explore the stories of inspiring individuals who have pursued their dreams and made a positive impact in the world. We hope you have enjoyed listening to our latest episode, and we would like to invite you to check out our other episodes for more thought-provoking discussions and inspiring stories. And don't forget to follow us on social media at Wander Studio and listen to a new episode every week.